KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi takes your calls and questions in our 10 a.m. hour today. First, we'll look at the fight to restore net neutrality. Advocates are in a federal courtroom as we speak, challenging the FCC's decision more than a year ago to deregulate broadband. Then we learn why California lawmakers want to lower taxes on pot and what that could mean for state revenues. That's all next on Forum. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. When the Federal Communications Commission voted just over a year ago to repeal net neutrality, those are the rules that require internet service providers to treat all web traffic equally, it prompted a slew of lawsuits from digital rights activists, tech companies, and states. Those legal challenges are being heard in a federal appeals court in D.C. at this hour, and how it plays out could shape the future of the Obama-era internet rules and California's attempt to enforce its own net neutrality law. Here to explain what's happening are Ryan Single. He's Media and Strategy Fellow at Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Society. He also covered net neutrality for Wired from 2002 to 2012. Good morning, Ryan Single.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. April Glazer is also with us. She is a technology writer at Slate. Good morning, April Glazer.
Good morning.
And April, I'll start with you. So just to back up a little, net neutrality rules were put in place in 2015, and they basically barred internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon from either slowing down or speeding up internet traffic as they saw fit. That ended at the end of 2017 when the FCC repealed those rules. So how long have we been in a non-net neutrality world?
Right. So the repeal was voted on at the end of 2017, but the law didn't actually go into effect until June of 2018. So it's been, you know, about half a year of not having net neutrality rules on the books, wherein internet service providers can block or slow down or throttle traffic for a fee or however they want, as long as they just say that they reserve the right to do so in their terms of service.
And has there been a notable difference, as you've seen it, in people's ability to get the content they want at the speeds they want?
We've had a few instances where we've seen reports, like, for instance, Santa Clara County Fire Department reported that while they were in the middle of helping fight wildfires, Verizon had throttled their traffic when they were supposed to have an unlimited data plan and forced them to actually up their data plan. And Verizon says that this was a customer service foul. Santa Clara County says that this is a net neutrality foul. We've also seen a report from Northeastern University that said wireless providers have been throttling, particularly to video streaming services like Netflix. Now, it's really hard to see the whites of their eyes on stuff like this because it happens slowly. You know, when a website doesn't load as fast as another website, you just navigate to another tab or another website. You really don't think of it that much.
Yes. And Ryan Single, would you agree with that assessment that some things are kind of subtle or hard to see in terms of the effects of the lack of net neutrality?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the harms are hard for people to understand. So, you know, we saw this in from 2013 to 2015, where the largest ISPs in the country all began slowing down Netflix traffic where it came into their networks. So not inside their networks, so sort of the typical throttling, but sort of slowed them down, made movies and games like terrible experiences for tens of millions of Americans, but we didn't know, nobody knew why that happened, right? You couldn't figure out, is it Netflix fault? And then it turns out that it was these of the large ISPs, the companies we pay to get online, were trying to sort of charge a ransom to online companies. So like League of Legends and Netflix, trying to get those companies to pay Comcast just so you could go and visit them. So we just saw in December, the New York Attorney General settled a two-year lawsuit against Time Warner Cable for doing these kinds of practices. So it's not always easy to see where these harms happen. And right now we have no cop on the block to make sure that, you know, when something happens, that they can go and investigate.
And it's not really an internet service provider's interest to make it super obvious, especially at this stage, right?
Right. Especially with, I mean, there's so much attention and the lawsuit going on. And, you know, you want to make sure, you know, those companies sort of look at things and be like, oh, we don't want to give any evidence that's going to be used against us in court until we're free and clear.
And talk about the lawsuit that is going on right now in the simplest terms possible, because what's being heard specifically today, for example, is extremely technical. But what happened in 2017 was pretty intense beyond just the fact that net neutrality was repealed.
Yeah. So if I can jump in here. So I would say, you know, what happened in 2017 is the FCC didn't just repeal the 2015 protections, which were the strongest protections the FCC had ever put in place. They undid 20 years of the FCC saying, we are going to be the cop that makes sure that companies that you pay to get online don't interfere with what you do online, right? So we saw Republican-led FCC fine companies, investigate Comcast. This FCC, when they repealed the rules, just also threw its hands up in the air and says, we don't even have the authority and it's not our job. So this was really a radical undoing of 20 years of the FCC. So with the court case we're seeing today is challenging the order on kind of three big grounds. So one, that the FCC didn't do it right, sort of like under procedural grounds, that they misread the statutes or they didn't have good evidence. They are also arguing that the reading itself was incorrect, was legally incorrect. And then third, one of the things the FCC did in 2017 when they repealed it was said, we don't have the authority to protect consumers, and states can't either. And so there's an argument that, you know, the states are saying, well, if you can't do it, we should be able to.
And April Glazer, that brings me to the status of California's attempt to have its own state rules on net neutrality. Where is that right now?
Yeah, so California is one of a number of states that have been working to pass their own net neutrality rules. And California did successfully do it. Governor Brown signed it. And it is on hold right now because the Department of Justice sued the state of California right after the law was signed, saying that this was a violation of the new FCC net neutrality rules that said states cannot pass their own, you know, net neutrality rules. And the reason why they're saying this is because it would create kind of a balkanized internet, whereas California had its own internet rules, every other state had its own internet rules, and their internet is borderless. Now, the thing is that if California's net neutrality rules were allowed to go into place, they would effectively work as net neutrality rules almost for the whole country in a way, because it's very hard for ISPs to just create an internet for California. But right now those are on hold, and the law is kind of waiting to be implemented, or we're going to see what happens with it until this court case plays out.
Yeah, so a lot's at stake today. And we're talking with April Glazer, technology writer at Slate, as well as Ryan Single, a media and strategy fellow at Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Society. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're talking about the latest front in the fight to save net neutrality playing out in a D.C. courtroom. We're talking about how it's been since the rules were repealed by the FCC for both users and for ISPs. And we're also checking in on the status of California's net neutrality law. Have you noticed any changes to your internet service or any changes to their terms of service by internet service providers, if you pay attention to that? Have you taken any action since net neutrality ended, like switching ISPs? Are you concerned that internet service providers might wield too much power? Or do you think this is a good move for the market to deregulate the internet? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also just ask questions of our two experts here. You can also post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. Post them on Facebook, on Twitter, or you can email us. We're at forum@kqed.org. So talk a little bit, Ryan Single, if you would, about how this could play out. And I know it's very hard to predict the way judges will go, but also just give us a little bit of insight into who they are and where you think this could go.
Right. So right now we have a three-judge panel from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which tends to handle sort of FCC-ish matters. It's a fairly balanced panel. So what we'll likely to see is some ruling on this in 6 to 9 months. There's a couple of possible outcomes. One, the FCC order could be sort of rendered null and void, and then we would go back to the 2015 order. There's the opposite, which is the order is upheld in full, and the judges rule the FCC was within its power. And then there's kind of a middle ground where you might see something like the FCC is allowed to repeal its repeal order stands, but say its state preemption law, state preemption gets knocked down, in which case we would see executive orders and state laws would be able to go into effect, and we'd have sort of a possible patchwork or states sort of copying and pasting the California law, which is sort of the gold standard for net neutrality protections at the state level. So those are kind of the three things we might see. And then there will likely be appeals to see the en banc, so the full hearing from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and then a possible appeal to the Supreme Court. So we're in this for the long haul.
And April Glaser, can you remind us again just the FCC's position? Because I realize we haven't actually laid that out, why they repealed it in the first place.
Sure. So the FCC, under Ajit Pai, the Trump-appointed commissioner, says that the internet is not a telecommunications service like it was classified as in 2015. In order to pass the rules. And when we say telecommunications service, we mean like an essential utility, like a phone or something that we really need in order to communicate, therefore giving the FCC the authority to pass public interest rules that require providers, don't throttle, don't block access, kind of keep it an open lane so that we can access any information we want. Ajit Pai changed that with the new repeal, saying that the internet is actually an information service, so it's more akin to video conferencing or email. And it's just something that we might kind of want extra or on the side as opposed to kind of an essential service. And with that, the FCC lost its authority to pass strong public interest laws over the internet and really protect the internet for consumers.
Well, Adriana tweets, I heard a net neutrality bill was introduced by Rubio or Cruz that would supersede state laws. What is in the bill and what might this mean for California? This also gets to a good question about what the legislature is likely to do on this. But either of you familiar with this bill by Rubio or Cruz?
I've seen similar proposals. So there's been some proposals by Republican lawmakers that would simply say that ISPs can't block or throttle while not dealing with pay prioritization or the other places that harms can happen on and where ISPs can create harms, such as when ISPs throttled Netflix at the edge of their network. So these are kind of the lightweight sort of net neutrality in name only. The 2015 order was comprehensive, and one thing that's important about the FCC is that they have rulemaking authority. So when some new harm happens, they can hold hearings, they can take in comments, and then they can create a new rule. So they were doing that, for instance, with zero rating, which is essentially the practice of an ISP saying certain kinds of data doesn't count against your data cap. So for instance, AT&T, if you subscribe to DirecTV, their video service, that doesn't count against your monthly data cap. The FCC went through a rulemaking process and in 2017 said that's unfair, right? That's an ISP like using their own content to an advantage, whereas something like what T-Mobile does, where they zero rate all data, all video data, right, all video services, that's great. That's consumer friendly. That's not anti-competitive. So that's something the FCC can do, and it's a harm that it exists, but is not included in the Republicans' proposals. You can compare, say, a Rubio's proposal to California's SB 822, which is far more comprehensive and realizes that net neutrality is like, if it's not comprehensive, it's not useful.
Then do you think, April Glaser, that there will be a legislative solution to this, which I think even the ISPs would like, right? Because as you were saying, it's not like they want to have all these different types of systems in different states if, in fact, that's how the courts go.
It's true. And we're seeing challenges from a number of states, not just California, Washington, Vermont, Minnesota. And so I do think that everybody agrees that a congressional solution would make the most sense. If this does snake its way up to the Supreme Court, who knows what will happen. And if more states do try to pass laws, the thing is that Congress takes a long time to do anything. And so this could very well play out in the courts faster than, you know, Congress is able to do something. And the thing with, you know, the FCC preempting state laws, the FCC actually was unsuccessful in a case trying to block state laws in North Carolina and Tennessee back when Wheeler, under the Obama era FCC, when he was trying to kind of block state laws that restricted municipalities from building their own broadband networks and having kind of like municipal-owned broadband networks. And so the FCC has been blocked from preempting state laws in the past. And so it's unclear if the FCC will be successful in stopping California from moving forward with it.
Well, are ISPs taking this matter into their own hands? I understand that some internet providers have sued the state of Vermont over its attempt to implement net neutrality rules.
Yeah, so they sued Vermont. They also sued California. So shout out.
Everyone's suing California.
We got sued first. shout out to California. So, you know, I think what's interesting about Congress is net neutrality is not a partisan issue around the country. It's a partisan issue in Washington, D.C. And it's not we're starting to see a little bit of a break in that. So, you know, there was some action last year to try and get the 2015 rules restored by Congress. And we saw three Republican senators, Senator Murkowski, Senator John Kennedy, and Senator Susan Collins, joined with the Democrats to get that through the Senate. We saw some Republicans on the House side to do as well. And in California, when California passed SB 822, that was passed on a bipartisan basis, both in the House and the Senate. There's some belief that, you know, the work will get there eventually, that this just looks like common sense that it's not something the American people want to see, partisan fighting over.
Well, let's hear from Bill in Menlo Park. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. So my concern is around privacy. And if I'm not mistaken, one of the net neutrality things was rolled back to say that ISPs can look at their data consumption. Like, what are you doing? Are you looking at Amazon? Are you looking at social media? Whatever. And this data or usage could then be sold or used or shared without your consent. And logging into my AT&T, I was able to see, like, all of my lines of service.
Bill, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Our guests actually are unable to hear your question, so just hold the line for 1 second while I bring in a. Okay, great. Now they are able to connect with you. So go ahead and re-ask your question, Bill, quickly, if you would.
Yeah, sorry about that. So privacy being a major concern, I think one of the net neutrality facets was rolled back to say that ISPs can see your usage, and then that data usage could be then shared or sold. And so if privacy is such a concern, like, why don't people care? What's going on?
Thanks, Bill. April Glazer.
Yeah, so there were rules restricting how ISPs could monitor user traffic. Those were repealed and are no longer on the books under Trump's FCC. And, you know, it is a huge concern that, you know, ISPs can basically see everything you do. And ISPs are moving more into the advertising space, which means they are collecting our data activity and potentially using that to sell ads to us. And that is a big concern. So that's not what people are rallying around as much when it comes to the net neutrality debate. Most people are concerned that ISPs are going to control what we see and how we see it. But we have to remember that when we do allow ISPs to become more powerful and we do entrench their ability to kind of control how we use the internet, that does include how they collect data and then monetize that in different ways. And ISPs probably have the best window into how we use the internet because they control the pipes.
Well, Bill, thanks for your question. This listener writes, this is definitely about creating scarcity and then charging an exorbitant price. Ending net neutrality won't spur innovation. It will just create a place where you can pool money. This is about the big guys pushing out the little players. Companies with big cash reserves can pay for the bandwidth. Small players will be forced out. For example, right now we have thousands of internet TV stations. If net neutrality ends, we will have just Netflix and Amazon. All of the small players will have to contract with Netflix, Amazon, or the cable companies. Many will instead just close up shop.
That's a good point, because really ISPs will be able to create what's essentially a two-way toll, where they'll be able to, yes, charge consumers both for their subscription fee and access to the internet, but then also charge websites to reach users at, you know, faster speeds. So we're talking about really just a money tree for the ISPs here. And, you know, the people who are going to be able to pay for those fast lane speeds are the companies that are already very moneyed, and they're going to be setting the price for those fast lane speeds, really locking other you know, smaller websites out. And let's face it, when a website doesn't load as fast as another, you just navigate away and slowly our behavior starts to change and those already powerful companies will become more powerful.
And what you're really talking about, I think, I mean, I began this program by asking if people have noticed any changes. And while they're small, I think what you're getting at is just the capacity to do bigger things is what we really need to be thinking about. Ryan Single, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I think so. So Professor Susan Crawford out of Harvard has a great book out called Fiber and is talking about sort of the future. And the future is when you have fiber and the data just is huge and it flows and it's cheap. And so I think the caller's mention of sort of enforced scarcity is absolutely right. So this is a way, if data is scarce then and expensive, then you can figure out a way to charge online companies to use that. You know, and that's a real fear. In 2012, I left my job at Wired to start an online company. And if at the time I would have had to pay, you know, and I was a former journalist, so I didn't have a lot in the way of savings. So, you know, if to start a company, I would have had to pay AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, just so that my content would load for their subscribers, I would have never started that company. And that's, you know, we have had a, you know, the internet in the United States has always acted under de facto or real net neutrality. And so that is what has led to so much innovation online and like pulling that back and then allowing ISPs to be more interested in scarcity than building out fiber to every American is a recipe for disaster.
And Nigel writes, current fiber optic technology provides oodles of bandwidth more than enough. Don't be fooled by the industry's attempt to create artificial scarcity. April Glazer.
Yeah, it's totally true. And in a lot of cities throughout the country, there's actually fiber that's underground that's not being used. And it's because ISPs have successfully lobbied locally to kind of keep that fiber dark and to prevent competition. And they've been doing this for years. And so not only are they kind of creating a false sense of scarcity, but they're actively working to thwart competition.
Well, Robert asks, can you detail the Type 2 classification that was revoked and why the previous FCC declared the internet should be regulated as a basic utility necessary for modern life?
I will try and keep that as short as I can. So Title II is the idea of the telecommunication service works a lot like the phone system, works like a train, works like planes, which is that it takes you from one place to another. It is not the destination. And that is crucial to our economy. So we should apply the same common carrier like obligations that we do for planes, trains, buses, Uber, Lyft, all of those all those kind of companies have these obligations to carry things for at a fair rate and not charge extra to specific people.
Well, this listener tweets, I dropped Comcast for Sonic, thanks to their stance on net neutrality. So for people who care about this, April Glazer, is this a good step to take? I mean, what do you recommend people do if they want to really support an open internet?
Well, that's a great step to take if you can take it. I absolutely believe that consumer choice matters and voting with your wallet is a fantastic thing to do. But more than 9 out of 10 Americans don't have more than 1 or 2 choices when it comes to broadband providers. I mean, I live in Oakland and Sonic is not available specifically where I live. I really only have the choice of AT&T because of my building. Where I used to live, I only had Comcast. So this is really an issue of competition. If you have that choice, sure, go with somebody who's going to be promising to act net neutral. If not, you might be out of luck.
But I guess in the meantime, try to make your voice heard if this is something that you care about.
This issue is not going away. Congress is planning on looking at it this session, and people should continue to speak up to their representatives.
April Glazer of Slate, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Ryan Single, Media and Strategy Fellow at Stanford Law School Center for Internet and Society. Thanks for joining us this morning as well.
Thank you so much.
And we have another half hour coming up, a forum that is about pot and an attempt to lower taxes on it. So stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.